Today I got a couple of readings for you. You know, I'm going to continue to look at other Bible stories that have a bit. I have a bit of a different take on than we tend to traditionally hear. And we're going to do that again today. And for generations, this particular passage has often been interpreted as Jesus basically telling people to stay in line, to pay taxes, obey the government, keep faith private, don't make any waves kind of thing. And a lot of conservatives even actually use it almost like a divine permission slip for unquestioning loyalty to political power, nationalism, that kind of thing. But I think when you slow down and really pay attention to what Jesus is doing here in this story, it becomes clear that he is not blessing empire, which a lot of folks have traditionally used these verses to do. He's actually exposing empire, in my opinion. The story is not about giving Caesar more authority. It's actually about reminding people that Caesar does not own human beings in the first place. So hear now these words from Matthew chapter 22, verses 15 through 22. Reading from the New Revised Standard Version, updated edition. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him in what he said, him being Jesus. So they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance to the truth and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. So tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. And then he said to them, "Whose head and whose title?" And answered, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And when they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him, and they went away. So maybe we add blessing and understanding to the reading of those words. I also want to read an excerpt from Ana Maria de Zazi Diaz, a book of hers. She is a Cuban-American theologian, one of the founders of Mujerista Theology, and it's actually from a book called Mujerista Theology. And in it, she has this to say. "Our struggle is not simply for survival, but for dignity. It is not enough to stay alive physically if our humanity is constantly denied, if our culture is despised, if our labor is exploited, and if our voices are silenced. Liberation has to do with claiming our right to be fully human." Can we have another song?
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to tune up a little bit for this. If we didn't care, we wouldn't tune up. Thank you.
My message this morning is entitled, Whose Image Is On You? So here's the setup from our story. Jesus is in Jerusalem. Tension is getting thick. Religious leaders are nervous. Rome's watching everything. The crowds are growing. And some folks decide that they are finally going to trap Jesus publicly. Not debate him. Not learn from him. Trap him. And honestly, that tells us something important about this story right from the beginning. Because whenever religion gets too cozy with power, it usually stops asking honest questions and starts asking strategic ones. So they approach Jesus with this dripping fake politeness. Teacher, we know that you're sincere, which is practically ancient world language for, we are absolutely about to try to ruin your life. And then comes the question, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Now, that sounds sort of boring to our modern ears because we hear taxes and we think paperwork and TurboTax, annual spiritual discipline, whatever, all the money went. But this was sort of explosive, actually. Because this was not merely a financial question. This was a loyalty question. A political question. Almost a theological question, really. It says, if Jesus says, don't pay taxes, then Rome can arrest him for rebellion. And if he says, pay the tax, well, the crowds that have been following might just turn on him because his taxes, they funded oppression and military occupation and sort of imperial violence, really. It's the ancient version of a cable news ambush interview, really. They think that they've got him cornered. But then Jesus does what Jesus does. He asks for a coin. And right there, I think the story gets a little funny because people trying to prove how righteous they are happen to also have an imperial coin sitting in their pockets. Now, Jesus doesn't. They are the ones that do. And then that coin, it matters. Because on that coin was the image of Caesar along with language declaring that Caesar is divine. Not metaphorically divine, literally divine. Caesar is God. Now, the empire stamped the image of power onto the money and demanded that everyone participate in the system that it supported. Might sound a little familiar. Now, here's where most sermons, I think, stop a little too early. Jesus says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God. And traditionally, that gets preached like, stay out of politics, be nice, pay your taxes, religion and public life should stay separate. But here's the thing. That interpretation falls apart the second you actually start looking closely at this story. Because Jesus never says that Caesar deserves worship. He never says that empire is sacred. He never says power is trustworthy. In fact, Jesus spends most of his ministry confronting systems that crush people. So what's he doing here? Notice what he asks first. Whose image is on the coin? Well, Caesar's. And then comes sort of the deeper question that Jesus never really has to fully say out loud, but it's definitely part of what he's pointing to. If Caesar's image is on the coin, whose image is on you? Is it Caesar's? Is it something else? Genesis says humanity bears the image of God. Not Caesar, not empire, not political parties, not billionaires, not nationalism, not fear. You, humanity, we bear the image of God, of the divine. And suddenly this stops being a sermon about coins. It becomes a sermon about almost ownership. Caesar can have his little metal discs back. But Caesar does not own human souls. And that, my friends, that is still the question of the day. Who gets to claim your imagination? Who gets to shape your compassion? Who gets to define your enemies? Who gets to tell you whose lives matter and whose lives do not? Because every empire stamps its image somewhere. Sometimes on coins, sometimes on flags, sometimes on cable news, sometimes on church pulpits. And in every empire wants you to confuse loyalty to power with righteousness. That is why authoritarian movements always wrap themselves in religion eventually. Always do. But if you can convince people that God and empire are the same, on the same side, well, you can get decent people to defend indecency while believing that they are defending faith as well. And Jesus walks right into the middle of that sort of machinery and says, essentially, you're asking the wrong question. The question is not what belongs to Caesar. The real question is what belongs to God. And according to Jesus, the answer is people. Poor belong to God. Immigrants belong to God. Trans kids belong to God. Palestinian children belong to God. Disabled folks belong to God. The people religion has pushed to the edge belong to God. The people politicians scapegoat belong to God. They belong to God in a way that gives them value that the world has constantly been trying to take away from them. Human beings are not the property of empires, what he's saying. And that's the sermon. That's the sermon. First, let's do this real quick, briefly. I want you to turn to someone near you. And answer this question. What message does our culture try to stamp onto people about their worth? What message does our culture try to stamp onto people about their worth? Take a minute or a little more. I'll give you a warning when we're about ready to wrap up.
I'm going to start wrapping those conversations up.
About 10 or 15 more seconds. So, one of the things that I think is fascinating about Jesus is that Jesus never really gives simple answers to complicated moral questions. Now, people want him to. Churches want him to. Politicians definitely want him to. But Jesus keeps pulling the conversation deeper than that. Folks ask about taxes. Jesus talks about identity. Folks ask about legality. Jesus asks about humanity. Folks ask about systems. Jesus starts talking about souls. And maybe that's part of why he still unsettles folks. Because we like clean categories. Good people, bad people, saved people, unsaved people, patriots, enemies. We like clean categories. But Jesus keeps crossing boundaries everyone else insists are sacred boundaries. And honestly, I think progressive Christianity at its best tries to sort of continue in that work. Not because we're trying to be rebellious for rebellion's sake or anything, but because love keeps crossing the lines that empires draw. Love keeps crossing the lines that empires draw. Jesus keeps asking, who benefits from this boundary? Who gets excluded? Who gets harmed? Who gets erased? And when religion starts protecting systems more than protecting people, well, Jesus gets disrupted real fast. You see it throughout the Gospels, healing on the Sabbath, touching the unclean, eating with outsiders, speaking with women in public, defending people everybody else wanted condemned. Jesus consistently chooses human dignity over religious performance. And that makes people nervous because systems depend on compliance. Empires need compliant people. Authoritarian religion needs compliant people. Christian nationalism needs compliant people. But Jesus keeps producing free people. And free people are dangerous. Not violent people, not hateful people, just people who refuse to hand over their humanity. People insist every person has sacred word. People who refuse to let fear become theology. People who understand that following Jesus was never about helping empire run more smoothly. It was about creating communities where compassion mattered more than domination. All right, turn, if you can, to somebody different and talk about this. What would change in our world if we actually treated every person as bearing the image of God or bearing the image of love? What would change in our world if we treated everyone that way? Take about a minute or two again.
I like the base.
15 more seconds to wrap those up.
You're only here to send one with them. You just have to.
You can send him next.
Really nice to be able to walk over and just change the AC. Never better do that in the middle of the sermon. Like, get a little warm. So I think one reason this story still matters so much is because we are constantly being discipled by competing voices. Every day, somebody is trying to tell us who matters. Somebody is trying to monetize our fear, weaponize our outrage, shrink our compassion, reduce human beings into categories. And Jesus just keeps interrupting all of it, saying, whose image is on you? Not who are you afraid of, not who do you hate, not what tribe do you belong to. Whose image is on you? And I say for all of us, it should be that the image of love is on us, the image of God is on us, which means your life cannot ultimately belong to cruelty or greed or domination or nationalism masquerading as Christianity. And maybe that is the quiet revolution buried within this story. See, Jesus is not just critiquing Caesar. He's trying to free people from believing that Caesar gets the final word. And my friends, there will always be Caesars in the world. Different names, different flags, different slogans. Same hunger for power. But the work of Jesus remains just the same. Reminding people that they are more sacred than systems that are trying to tear them down. Reminding people their neighbors are not enemies. Reminding people that no empire gets to define human worth. And reminding us that if the image of the divine is truly in all people, then our faith cannot simply be about belief. It has to become about solidarity. It has to become justice. It has to become stubborn refusal to let anyone convince us that some people matter less than other people. Because Caesar's image may be stamped on the coins, but the image of love is stamped on people. And Jesus was very clear about which one mattered more. We asked you for another song.
Yes.
Surprised you with that, didn't I?
Yeah. We shifted gears. We decided to, we're going to play a tune called The Rights of Man.
Oh, fantastic. Looking forward to it. Thank y'all. Thank you again. It is truly a gift to have you out here with us. Really appreciate it. That was lovely. For those online, we're entering into a period where it's traditionally a prayer time. We also think of it as meditation or as a moment to grapple with just the words that you're needing in this minute. So let's all bow our heads together. May we remember today that no empire gets the final word about human worth. Not governments, not markets, not politicians, not churches addicted to power, not fear masquerading as faith. May we remember that long before anyone tried to stamp labels onto us, onto our neighbors, onto the vulnerable, onto the stranger, the image already resting on every human being was love. And may that remembrance unsettle us. May it unsettle the places where we have confused nationalism with discipleship, where we have chosen comfort over courage, where we have guarded systems instead of protecting people. May we become the kind of community that sees sacred worth where the world sees inconvenience, that sees belovedness where empire sees expendability, that sees neighbors where fear tries to manufacture enemies. When cruelty grows loud, may compassion grow louder. When propaganda grows heavy, may truth still rise. When the word tells people they are less than human, may we be the people who stubbornly, loudly, tenderly tell the truth anyway. The truth that you are not owned by fear. You are not owned by empire. You are not owned by hate. You bear the image of love. And may we live like we believe it. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and creation. Recognize that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may you share that love and happiness with all of those you meet. Thank you.